Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour says parents of young athletes and their families need more information about the definition of concussions and symptoms to look for, as well as appropriate treatment protocols. She wrote an interesting piece and reminded us of the very, very sad deaths this fall of three high school football players linked to direct head injuries on the field of play. One collegiate football player's death potentially attributed to unresolved post-concussion syndrome. She says any sporting or recreational event can pose a risk for concussions, and the outcomes of sport grossly outweigh the negative consequences of injuries, but injuries should not be considered as just a part of the game. Joining us this hour is Dr. Cynthia Trowbridge. She is Clinical Education Coordinator, Athletic Training Education Program at the University of Texas at Arlington. She is a certified athletic trainer and doctor of kinesiology and is here to talk about what it is that everybody needs to know about head injuries associated with football and other sports. We'll be welcoming phone calls for her. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Professor, I guess we can call you Cindy. Is that okay?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
I'm more familiar with Cindy.
Okay.
So perfectly fine. Students
All right.
need to call me Dr. Trowbridge. But
okay. We'll call you both during the
All
course
right.
of the hour. You may as well use the title when you have it.
Sure.
Cindy, thank you so much for being with us. You say that you've been in this field for a long time, and you've been an athletic trainer for sports of all levels for over 20 years, but it's only been recently that you're getting a lot of questions about concussions, more now than ever before. Why is that?
I think it's because of the light the media has shown on it, and unfortunately all the recent complications that have been linked to concussions. And also our better understanding in the medical community of the brain and of long-term symptoms of concussion.
Mm-hmm. And it's particularly harmful, concussions are, if I'm right here, to very young brains, because our brain is still building itself.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Younger athletes have a pretty immature nervous system, and we talk about that in decision-making and other things, that individuals aren't able to process that at a young age when they are at an adult age. And so although our brains are really plastic and they do heal fairly well, and a child's brain has that ability, they just don't have the level of coating on their nerves, and they have a thinner frontal and temporal bone oftentimes. And then another aspect is the brain size tends to be a little bit smaller. So several of these things combine together to produce a little bit higher risks in our young athletes.
Do you think that there are certain sports that very young athletes simply should not play because of the risk of concussion?
I don't think it's absolutely should not play the sport. I think that we need to take a step back and determine what level of play should they be instructed in. I think we need more information in regards and more open discussion about when is the appropriate time to introduce tackling and contact into sports such as football and wrestling and ice hockey and lacrosse and some of the other sports that allow body-to-body contact and also a little bit more of an emphasis on hitting players to the ground.
You talk about the amazing outcomes of sport participation, and those do indeed outweigh the negative consequences of injuries. Go down that path for
us.
Yeah,
well, you know, and this comes from Brian Hainline, who's the medical director for the NCAA, but I heard him at a conference, and he really put it into perspective. He said, sports done right is magical. You know, if you've played sport or participated in any way, shape, or form, as cheerleader, manager, even team little student athletic trainer, there's something about sport that's magical. But sports done wrong can be particularly harmful. Kevin Guskowitz, who's our a renowned researcher in athletic training and concussions, he's been known to say that football doesn't make people die. People make football dangerous. A little bit within that is I don't want to see sports go away. I want us to see in sports that may involve some higher risk, think we just need to work on risk management and risk education.
So if people make football dangerous, how are they doing that, and how can it be remedied?
Yeah, well, I think there's several ways you can minimize risk, and one of the ways is to require pre-participation physical exams so we can find out if these kids are coming in with any underlying problems. There has been some links, moderate at best, but we're getting there with that individuals have females may be more predisposed to concussions and prolonged symptoms. Individuals who suffer from learning disabilities, individuals who possibly have a migraine history or other associated history with headaches. And so if we can get on top of these with pre-participation exams and provide the appropriate risk management and education, we might be able to help. We also, in terms of equipment, need to think about youth football equipment and that a smaller size is not all that's required. One of the things that is important is that they may need lighter equipment. Their body weight is not the same, and it's not the same throughout a youth team either. A good example of that is as a part of the Smarts Team program with the Moms Team Institute, I covered youth football this fall in Grand Prairie, Texas. And I could have an 8-year-old who was 60 pounds and one who was 140 pounds. So they're not even, and they're going to wear different sizes of equipment, but it's not only the size of the equipment, but the weight of the equipment, and in particularly properly fitted helmets, and that the helmet doesn't weigh too much relative to their own neck strength, because that's a huge issue. And neck strength is being really connected with the ability to brace and hopefully and prevent some of the shaking that happens in a concussion. A couple other things is all football coaches need to teach the heads-up model. It's a nationwide model that the NFL has adopted and is pressed across the CDC, and it's see what you hit. So no tackling head down to where you have the chance of contacting the crown of your head.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I feel is that we need to see more enforcement of rules on helmet-to-helmet contact and that it be called and it be penalized in games and it not be encouraged. And then another area is that if an individual has suffered a certain number of brain traumas, whether they've had signs and symptoms or not, but have taken a certain amount of blows, and we do not have an answer for this yet in any ways, we may want to have some idea of how we can reduce the total number of brain traumas. There was a pretty good study that actually they found evidence, I believe it came out of Purdue University, that it was kids who had never really reported concussion symptoms but had played football for a number of years actually had neurological changes associated with those who had diagnosed concussions. So there may be something to these underlying brain traumas that don't develop on the surface but are causing neurological changes underneath.
Well, and we're seeing that, aren't we, with lawsuits that are going through the courts right now from former NFL players who have early dementia.
Yeah, now there's no clear link at this point between concussions and traumatic encephalopathy, but we're finding more evidence. And so I want to be clear that it's not a defined, definitive link, but there are a lot of things pointing to neurological degeneration as a result of multiple head traumas.
When you talk about physical exams being important, aren't those a standard part of participation in high school, middle school, and younger sports? Evidently, they're not.
Yeah, well, they are in interscholastic sports and in most private schools, you know, associated with religious schools and everything. But they're not in youth sports. And so kids can show up at the local county's youth program and not have to produce evidence of a pre-participation physical exam. And then the other side is who's doing these pre-participation physical exams. And there's some concerns about individuals who are putting themselves out there as qualified to really assess the whole athlete and to understand the sport that they're going to be playing and what specific characteristics may put them more at risk in that sport. Pre-participation exams are a well-accepted part of interclassic sports, but not of youth sports.
I see. Mm-hmm. Why is it that parents have, and what are the misconceptions regarding, you say, the definition, symptoms, and treatment for concussions?
Yeah, I think that what's happened over time is that a lot of education has gone out, and It's widely available on websites and in print, but somehow the key signs and symptoms aren't totally being recognized, and some of even what they call the red herrings, or we call them red flag signs and symptoms, aren't being recognized by parents. And Mannings and colleagues put out a study in the fall that looked at parents of children ages 5 to 15 in recreational tackle football and really found some interesting information that not many of the parents, and so only one parent was able to identify all 12 symptoms that they had listed, but 40% of them got 8 of the symptoms. And one of the things that they were particularly missing were the irritability and the emotional outbursts and the sleeping difficulty, which can be very common signs of some deep-seated neurological problems.
Mm-hmm. And these concussions you have written, you say, can occur from trauma other than a blow to the head.
Yes.
Well, how else can they occur?
Yeah, well, one of the key things is when an individual is thrown backwards or forwards and lands and catches themselves, either on their buttocks or with their arms, there's a certain amount of whiplash that happens.
So I
just equate it to in a car. You may never hit your head in a car accident, but you can suffer a concussion due to the movement of the brain inside the skull. And so that's a unique thing about a child, is that their skull is much larger than their brain, and it's supported by a certain amount of fluid. And the problem is that once that brain accelerates, because that space in that skull is a little bit larger than it is in an adult, the brain tissue itself can actually accelerate more and then hit the inner skull surface and then bounce back and hit. Of course, that can happen in adults as well, but there's something with the children's brain and being almost like an egg yolk.
Do we have enough medical personnel on the sidelines here to recognize when a concussion has taken place and it may be extremely dangerous to have a child return to play or to return to school?
Yeah, I don't believe we do. Only about 60% of the United States secondary schools have access to an athletic trainer, and I believe that one-third of those are actually full-time athletic trainers, meaning somebody that doesn't just come for the game and then doesn't see them on Monday or on Tuesday, which is one of the things with concussions is oftentimes signs and symptoms are delayed. So we need more certified athletic trainers out in our secondary schools, and then we definitely need them at the youth sport level. I think it's very far and few between that there are certified athletic trainers at youth sports events.
Certainly those high school players who died, those incidents were heavily publicized. Did that not result in a call for more athletic trainers?
It has resulted in a call for athletic trainers, but it has not been a call that has been met. And in many cases, it's been voted down in bond issues and other things in lieu of other items that's been felt necessary. I believe it was maybe 2005, North Carolina had a couple deaths, and I remember an ESPN Outside the Lines show that brought the school administrator on, and they mentioned, well, it costs $50,000 to hire a full-time athletic trainer, and I don't have that type of money, but to me, that's silly thinking. That's a life, and somebody that could possibly save multiple lives. So I think there's a mix in understanding how really truly important it is.
So there must be a number of people who are believing, and sometimes we see this on the field, an obvious concussion and somebody goes back into the game, a lack of understanding of what this is, still sort of this tough person mentality, oh, it's all right, you'll be okay, go ahead and play.
Yeah, there's a culture of resistance in reporting the signs and symptoms, and then there's also an area where we need to get rid of this playing through pain mentality unless it's deemed that, you know, it's an ankle sprain and it's okay to have a little bit of pain when you're running at full speed. The problem with brain injuries is that there just isn't enough of an ability to detect that the brain is limping. I've heard this many times from some concussion experts that it's very easy to for the orthopedic specialist to see that the knee's injured because the athlete limps. It's hard to see the brain limping without doing some more detailed testing.
We welcome phone calls for our guest. Cindy Trowbridge is associate professor in the Department of Kinesiology at the University of Texas at Arlington. Dr. Trowbridge is a certified athletic trainer and doctor of kinesiology, and we're talking about the very real threat of concussions associated with certain sports, what it is that all parents should know about concussions and school administrators, it would appear as well, the importance of athletic trainers, the importance of signs of concussion, parents noticing when something is wrong, and looking at, I found this part of her writing very interesting, what needs to be done in terms of substantial rest after concussions, both physical rest before you return to an activity and rest before you return to school as well. Here's our phone number. We'd love to have you join us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Lines are open for you right now. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls now as we talk about concussions, what we need to know about them, how dangerous they are, particularly to younger athletes, what schools need to know, parents need to know, and we're welcoming phone calls at 800-486-8655. Scott in La Crosse, our first caller. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Happy New Year.
You too.
Thank you. I heard a discussion of this someplace recently on public radio, and the one of the people commentating said it would almost be better if we went back to the old era of leather helmets, and you know, got people out of these seeming protective cages that they can use their heads to spear with impunity, and what that thought prompted to me was, first of all, what do you think of that as an idea, and second of all, has anybody done a study of rugby players? Because as I understand it, rugby is very similar to American football in terms of the tackling and the hitting and blocking and all that. And as far as I know, those players do not wear helmets at all.
That is a great question, Scott, and one that is being actively investigated. New Hampshire University has an incredible researcher named Dr. X. Schwartz, and he has actually brought in rugby players to teach half of the University of New Hampshire football team how to tackle rugby style, and then left the others to the normal American football style, and is in the process of gathering that data. He just received an outstanding grant from the NFL to complete that research. And so clearly rugby players do not wear helmets because they're taught not to hit with their head. They tackle with their bodies. There has been some discussion, and Dr. Robert Cantu, a renowned neurosurgeon in our field, has indicated that no youth, I believe, under the age of maybe 15 should play contact football, that everything should be flag prior to that. So there's an element of the leather helmet might solve some things, but we're going to have to really do some teaching on how to tackle, because I think of what they've watched on TV and seen on their own fields and maybe played in uniform and with helmets, that there'd be some significant education that would need to be put forth. Just a note on the helmet is that it was initially designed to prevent skull fractures, not concussions, because individuals in the 1900s were dying of skull fractures. Hmm. So I've heard this analogy, too, is that you're protected by a car in a car accident, but you can still get pretty beat up even though the car isn't crushed and other things, because you, if you're not buckled, especially, you get bounced around the car. That's your brain in your skull. It bounces around in there. It's suspended in fluid.
That's very interesting. I'll be fascinated. Do you know what, can you tell me what kind of a time frame they're thinking?
Yeah, you know, he just got the money. I mean, it came out probably a couple months ago, and I think they do have some preliminary research that'll probably be presented throughout the end of this winter and into the spring, into the summer, and then the continuation longitudinal study of looking at these athletes over their 3 to 4 year football career. So if you're interested, it's the University of New Hampshire, and his name is Eric Schwartz.
And funded by the NFL. That's
yeah, the NFL is has partnered along. It's one of their partner grants with some other entities as well. But and you can also find out information on the National Athletic Trainers Association webpage because we put out a post congratulating him.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the information.
Thank you, Scott, for the call. Tell me about the study that you're doing. I understand you're interviewing parents for a qualitative research study using the health belief model.
Yeah. I'm working with a colleague, Dr. Sheetal Patel. She's actually at Stanford University now, having left UT Arlington, but we're still working on this. And we're trying to develop and test a communication campaign for parents. And the health belief model, this is Sheetal's major area. My area is the concussion side. But looking at caregivers' perceived susceptibility and severity to suffering a concussion, their child suffering a concussion, what barriers they might face in getting information about concussions, treatment for concussions, what barriers they might put up as well, what are certain cues for action that they'll take in order to get more medical information, to find out answers, and then what they see the benefits of education in concussion are. And then another area we're looking at is the message source credibility and does the source matter. I think what we're finding is that parents and coaches want oversight. They're thirsty for information, but there's very little oversight. And they're not as well educated as we think they are because the information is out there. But I had another colleague at a conference talk about this, Dr. Jim McDonald, is that if you build it, they will not come. You must implement the best practices. So it's all built. It's all out on the web. You can find wonderful resources. But it's somehow not being implemented in a way that parents are grasping on and owning it.
So like why is that? Why?
You know, I don't know. I think that there's been a change in youth sport and that this culture of that my child needs to play competitive soccer at age 3 in order to get a university scholarship and then potentially be looked at for the United States Olympic teams.
Exactly.
And so the focus has gone away from the fundamentals of sport, which would have involved things like risk management and education, and they've gone into this massive amount of travel teams and putting money into it and paying for private coaches, and we seem to have overlooked some of the most essential parts of youth sports in this quest.
Let's go to KJ in Madison. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a mom of 3 very active boys. We wrestle and play football. My oldest is a sophomore and has had concussions in the past. We are very lucky. We have a very proactive high school in the concussion education. But I'm wondering if you had any opinion on how reliable the impact testing are.
Yeah, we're at a crux right now with a lot of the different baseline tests, and I know that there's been research out from some different researchers that the reliability of the impact test may not be as it's been purported. However, my comment on that is all of these things that we use for baseline testing, whether it be impact or if you've heard of the King-Devick test or if you've heard of blood serum tests, they're all just tools. And there's not going to be a protocol. We have to treat each individual concussion separately and then each successive concussion separately because your 3 children could have the same magnitude of a hit but could have vastly different symptoms or no symptoms on a first concussion. And then on a second concussion, if that were to happen, unfortunately, it could be the same thing, as same symptoms or vastly different symptoms. And so we can't put all of our chips in one pile in relationship to, well, if the impact says they're not good to go, they're not good to go. We need to consider it as a part of a whole.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I appreciate your comments. They rely heavily on that.
Yeah, and as they should in one, because the cognitive aspect is an area that has been overlooked. It's the best. It is one of the best tools that we have to this date. Does that help too? That there's just nothing right now that is any better. And really the deal is that when you combine the impact test with truthful reporting of signs and symptoms and balance assessment, done in a way using more high-end equipment rather than just standing on one leg and somebody timing you, the ability to rule out concussion and the ability to rule in concussion, so rule it out when it's not there and rule it in when it is I think upwards of 80 to 85%. When you just use one of those elements alone, you start falling down into the 50%. Does that make sense? So we talk about it being a combined tool that you can't do it without all three or more sets of information.
KJ, what were the guidelines that were given to you and that you followed before your son could return to play or return to school?
Well, it really kind of depended. It depended on who I went to as far as healthcare. The first time we reported it, he was not allowed back for a minimum of 20 days or until he could pass the impact test. And he was to be out of school, no math, no reading, no television for at least a week or so before he could be reassessed.
That's a pretty long time, isn't it,
yeah,
Cindy?
Yeah, it is a long time. I mean, but there is no perfect protocol. And most people will tell you it's a 1 to 3 week window of recovery, but people are going to fall below that 1 week and way above the 1 week. A recent study did show that even though athletes cognitively turn to baseline with similar impact tests and other tests, but once they resumed exercise, their cognitive scores actually went back down, showing that maybe that wasn't enough to determine that they were ready to go. So it's important that each child is treated within their own scope. And I know if they have their own baseline, that's one key thing. But trying to do a multitude of tests and not relying just on the one.
Thanks so much for your call. Let's go to Tina in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I have a comment and also a question. My boys both played sports in high school, and they're 3 years out and 6 years out of high school, respectively. And by the time that my younger one started, they were doing baseline tests. Neither of them played football. But the number of concussions that we saw in soccer mm-hmm. and wrestling were pretty scary, and also in rugby, actually. My question is, or my comment is, it was interesting to me that oftentimes the coaches were making the decisions about who stayed in the game and who didn't stay in the game or in the match. And it's like with the NFL, if you have a coach making a decision, that seems to me not to be the right person to make the decision. And if you're in a JV situation, once the kids get to varsity, they have a trainer there. But in other times, they might be out wrestling for hours or playing soccer or something, and there's no trainer there if they're not at that higher level. So that's just one thing that always concerned me a little bit as a parent. But one thing I was also going to ask you about was they say in Wisconsin that the second highest rate of concussions is for girls mm-hmm. playing soccer, and I wonder why that is. And I will take my answer off the air, and thanks
Tina.
The show.
Yeah, great questions and great commentary. So just a little bit first on the coaches making decisions and having athletic trainers at varsity versus JV, that's where this need for certified athletic trainers stems for all levels of competition and not leaving it in the hands of a coach. All 50 states do have a concussion law at this point, and most of those concussion laws involve education and training for coaches to be able to recognize subtle signs, some of the signs and symptoms, but that does not make them healthcare providers. And so that's where I believe it's important to have certified athletic trainers and then parents to know these. So when the child comes home and they're possibly exhibiting signs and symptoms, the parent can take them to their preferred medical care provider. As far as the girls and, well, all sports, you can get a concussion in any sport. You can get concussion in swimming. So there's the element of hitting the wall and other. So we can't rule out any sport for that, and wrestling and rugby and soccer is increasing in their numbers of concussions. But girls, we just don't have an answer right now, but we do know that there is a gender component to it, and Dr. Covason out at Michigan State is really invested in trying to get to the bottom of this. And she's noted that it may be because girls are a little bit more honest about reporting their symptoms, but there also may be something in the female brain that may be associated with hormones and the like. The other aspect that's been put out there is their neck strength and overall range of motion may be different than that of a young man's. And what we do know is that neck strength plays a significant role in helping to prevent concussions. In one study, there was a decrease in 5% of the number of concussions by just increasing neck strength by 1 pound.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people know that.
Yeah, that's something that needs to get out more. Neck strength, neck strength, neck strength. Your ability to bowl your neck, as I was taught, and to stiffen for that potential contact, and then having the ability that if you are contacted and you move, that you can help slow that down, decelerate that acceleration that's been placed on you. And so that may be where that gender, but that's still a question that needs more answers.
Mm-hmm. Mike in Sun Prairie, hi.
Do you think that high school football and maybe even soccer will survive another 5 or 10 years?
I sure hope so. They're amazing. And what they bring to a community and what they bring to the youth and to the parents and to everybody involved in it. But I think we need to take a step back and ask ourselves, what is the purpose? And can we make this safer so it's a lifetime sport and that we're not setting people up for not only the potential of neural damage and brain injury later in life, but the orthopedic issues that possibly come along with all the overuse and the playing year-round. We have just vastly drifted away from a society where sports was play and fun, and you went from different sport to different sport, and even if you played all three sports, there was a period of rest in between, which is just essential.
Thank you, Mike, for the call. Ken in Milwaukee, hello.
Hi, very timely for me. I'm kind of following up also on a little bit of some of the prior calls. I have a teen who has currently been diagnosed with a concussion. He sustained this playing a pickup game of football. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I'm wondering about is since he is out of school and is limited in what he is allowed to do at this point, is there anything that would point to what typically a teen who is concussed should be doing and should not be doing, what kind of activities he should be participating in, just in the recuperation phase?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're still getting to the bottom of that a little bit, but I don't think that, this complete rest, putting them in a dark room and closing the curtains and not disturbing them or anything is really the answer, but it's finding a balance, and again, this is with the individual, is a level of cognitive and emotional and physical activity that does not reproduce signs and symptoms, and so I would say that if currently with signs and symptoms, my recommendation would be to pretty much, physically rest and to try to just quiet things down to see if associated signs and symptoms can go away. And then if those do, then gradually reintroducing certain things, but not in mass, not letting them spend 2 hours playing a computer game and 2 hours reading, that it would be small bits. And then rest periods would be put in between there to see the activity actually cause the signs and symptoms immediately, or is there a delayed sign and symptom? And then just gradually increasing, much like you would do in an exercise progression with that. There are some pretty good guidelines for return to learn. The American Academy of Pediatrics has a wonderful paper out that talks about amount of classroom, amount of reading without a break. And again, this is all just preliminary in terms of trying to find that best fit, but I will stand by that we're all individuals.
And it must be very difficult for young people to adhere to those mm-hmm. recommendations because they're spending so much time on computers and telephones mm-hmm. and tweeting and television, all those things that you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, and I think that may be the root of it is that and parents are having a hard time finding out when they're doing it because they can't be around them 24/7 and they may be cheating and that may be then prolonging symptoms and then they may be hiding symptoms. And so I think we've advanced so much with technology, but it's actually taken us back in terms of our ability to rest and recuperate truly allow the body to heal itself.
Thanks, Ken. All the best to your son and to you, Matt in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. My wife is a nurse, and I have two teenage boys. And so the subject's, something we talk about. And essentially, there's this cachet for the kids to go out for their freshman football. And my wife is very hesitant about it. And yet at the same time, I know that, there's some number of children. I've heard it a few times, somewhere like 600 to 900 kids get killed on their bicycles every year. Mm-hmm. And my one son is really into skateboarding. Do I need to be any more worried about the freshman football than them riding their bikes or skateboarding or whatever else they could, get into?
I think the biggest thing that you can do is to be proactive about the safety issues, so learn the risks. So my advice is, they ought to wear helmets with the bicycling and the skateboarding, and they shouldn't be allowed to be doing ramps until they've mastered some of the smaller skills. And when they begin to do high-tech tricks, it should be, with some guidance of somebody who knows what they're doing. And that is where we come down to football and to youth sports and to who coaches these teams of the five-year-olds and upwards until you get into the actual, paid positions and the like, are well-meaning parents who may never have done more than just play football themselves for 2 years as a JV athlete. And so we've got to insist that coaches have the absolute proper training in football technique and equipment and tackling and heads up, and then not only that, but that they know first aid and CPR and some injury prevention. So in answer to your question, I think that it's about being proactive about the safety issues that are associated with each and every activity, as any parent should be. I have heard this before, that the tragedy doesn't lie in hitting the pole if you're riding your bike, and the tragedy lies in not being allowed to hit the pole. And so I think there's something to be said about giving us the opportunity to expand our environment and to try things, but still doing it with a little bit of caution and understanding the risks that are associated.
Thank you very much for your call, Matt. Well, do you think then that a lot of people have become overly concerned? We've heard reports that youth football programs now are 10% less populated than they used to be, mostly because of moms who are concerned about what you're talking about.
Well, I agree, and I think that one of the things that all parents should potentially look into watching, it's called the SMART Teams. And it was developed by the Moms Team Institute, and they took a tiny school in Oklahoma that was thinking about canceling their football program, and by implementing six pillars to concussion management, they were able to reduce the concussions significantly and to restore confidence in the program. And within those pillars, a lot of it is about concussion education, but the second pillar is to minimize risk. The third pillar is to have early identification, and one of those ways is to employ an athletic trainer and to encourage kids to self-report and to equip with appropriate equipment and to evaluate athletes with tools we know works. And then to monitor return and use conservative treatment, and then to also be wary and understand that if an individual suffers multiple numbers of concussions, or it's taking less force to cause a concussion, or they're exhibiting slower recovery from their second or their third concussion, or their cognitive loss is even more significant, then they may need to be retired from football.
More phone
calls. That's a complicated decision.
Right. More phone calls in a moment. Professor and Dr. Cindy Trowbridge is our guest this hour, clinical education coordinator, athletic training program, education program at the University of Texas at Arlington. She is a doctor of kinesiology and a certified athletic trainer, and has written and been involved in this field of what every parent should know about concussions, not just parents, but what should schools know about this and athletic programs know about about this as well. We've had a ton of phone calls. We have a couple lines open right now. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow, during our program, the first hour tomorrow, there have been reports that Republicans in Wisconsin are exploring the idea of a so-called recovery district in Milwaukee to take over failing schools. Tomorrow we'll speak with a district in Tennessee that has been taken over by the state, and we'll speak with a member of the local teachers union opposed to this. And then the second hour of our program, this hour, the movie Selma, which I did see yesterday, is getting a lot of attention, and there is some criticism of the film's historical inaccuracies, particularly the portrayal of President Lyndon Baines Johnson. We'll be speaking with a professor of history at the University of Delaware about this issue, hour two, tomorrow of our programs. All right, let's go back to phone calls. Kenneth in Janesville. Hi.
Hello. What I see is we're still in the caveman age as far as inventing a helmet that will prevent 90% of the concussion. I mean, they're going to have to start using their brains. I mean, football players are going to have to invent a helmet. People that understand what's going on with their brain. And a hard helmet is just not the answer. It's 180 degrees out. I mean, you need a soft helmet. And what about a turban, you know, from the Middle East? For the players to wear a turban, you know, maybe...
It is amazing that there isn't something that's been figured out by the scientific community, isn't it, Cindy?
Yeah, a little bit, but I can tell you that researchers everywhere are looking into this, and one of the problems is that the more technologically sound, the heavier it gets, and so there's that element of we can't carry that much weight, potentially. Virginia Tech, though, has a wonderful research institute that is really aggressive on testing helmets that come out on the market and also trying to work with the companies who want to help design what may be a better helmet within that. Yeah, I mean, I think that absent of having an airbag that deploys and surrounds your head, there at this point is not much that we can do to improve a helmet, but they are working in that direction.
Thanks, Kenneth. Dan in Madison. Hi.
Hi. My daughter had a concussion approximately 2 years ago. She's been seen by a rehab doctor in Madison, and she's gone through physical therapy and occupational therapy. And her symptoms have improved, but she is still not completely back to herself. I'd say maybe about 80%. So I wanted to ask about post-concussion syndrome and what the prognosis would be and if there's anything that can be done at this point for her after about 2 years post-injury.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's not in as much my area, but post-concussion syndrome is a huge concern, and certain conditions can last, unfortunately, a lifetime, and individuals just learn how to manage them. I do know that there are some areas of concussion therapy, including vestibular therapy, in which they're trying to help the individual's vestibular system recover. Other than that, it may just be the age-old time that it will take time for the brain to continue to heal.
Thank you, Dan, for your call. Dia in Burlington. Hi.
Hi. I am a physical therapist assistant student at a technical college in Kenosha. I'm finishing up, and I just wanted you to know that we're getting this information. I also work in a outpatient clinic, and the physical therapists there do the concussion evaluations. And I had a question about, we've had a couple of encounters where doctors wanted the evaluating clinicians to sign off to release the student back to the sport, and the therapists really feel that that's the primary care physician's position. And I'm wondering what your opinion is on that.
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think something that we have to approach is who's the appropriate person to sign off. And, you know, in my impression and in my years working, I worked alongside a team physician, and although the team physician was signing the return to play for no matter what injury it was, we worked together on it. And I believe that, you know, the individual is best trained in concussion management should be the one that signs off on it. And if that added qualification has been achieved by a certified athletic trainer or physical therapist or the like, then that's more important than possibly a pediatrician who may or may not have extra training in concussion management.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your call. Bill in Madison. Hi.
Hi. Well, I keep hearing about mothers worrying. I'm a 71-year-old male who played football in the dark ages. No masks, no nothing. I mean, so we took concussions like crazy, and they just had us sit down for a minute and then come back in. But my primary worry now is in states, especially like Texas, where the downward pressure is, where you've got third and fourth graders playing full contact, full armor football. And I can't believe that the brain of a kid who's 7 or 8 years old is ready for that kind of whiplash.
Yeah, I agree with you fully. And so we need to revisit how we can incorporate football into their lives in a way that would be safe or manageable. And the disastrous Friday Night Tyke show, the National Athletic Trainers Association and many organizations came out very much against that. And I do know that in the community that I worked with, they don't play tackle until 8 and 9 years old. All the other kids are flag. So they've already implemented some rules in that area. But it's something that we need to discuss.
8 and 9 seems pretty young to me for tackle football as well.
Yeah.
And what's fueling that? Is it the desire to play for the Dallas Cowboys? You think your child? It is.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And there's a great Doug Abrams and then a man called Coach Wolf write a blog piece that I subscribe to. And he's Doug Abrams is a law school professor who specializes in sports law. And Rick Wolf is a former coach. And this just came out. And he said, college scholarships, when to have the Santa Claus talk with your athlete. Claus with an E. That I'm sorry, but not everybody gets college scholarships. And that it's not going to appear in a package. And that we need to really emphasize this, that it's not a foregone conclusion, and playing more football or soccer or doing more wrestling doesn't necessarily set you up any better. And that's been a myth that seems to have taken over.
Parents are strange sometimes, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think that their purposes of having them play, and again, sports are so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
But a notion that you have to be 3 and on a soccer field in order to have a chance, or 6 and in a football uniform, I think that we need to step back and ask ourselves: is this really the truth? Because a number of orthopedic groups and the NATA and a variety of groups are coming together with youth injury prevention. If it's not concussions, it's overuse injuries. And no 13-year-old should ever have to have what's called Tommy John surgery. That's an elbow surgery that should happen with an individual who is pitched and in the major leagues for many, many years. And there's just a number of situations. And I think you can look up statistics of the number of World Series, Little League World Series players that actually played in the professional sports, and you'd find that to be very small. There's a lot of information out there, and I think that we need to get it to where it's implemented, where it's in a way that we have to act on it.
Thank you, Dr. Trowbridge. You've been a wealth of information. Thanks
Excellent.
For being with
well,
us.
Thank you, Kathleen Dunn, and to Wisconsin Public Radio for giving me this opportunity. I truly appreciate it.
Yeah, our pleasure. Dr. Cindy Trowbridge, she's an athletic trainer, a doctor of kinesiology, clinical education coordinator, athletic training education program at the University of Texas at Arlington. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this and to KP as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Tomorrow, again, during our first hour, we'll talk about the state taking over a so-called recovery district in Milwaukee, taking over failing schools. This is happening in a couple states. We'll talk to someone from Tennessee who's doing this and also a member of the local teachers union here in Milwaukee in opposition. That's the first hour of our program. Hour two, does the movie Selma need to be historically accurate? Stay with us. Great conversations ahead.